ready? Here we go.
The Hit Breakfast Show. Spotlight has everything you need to create, decorate and celebrate this Christmas. The Cliffo and Gabby podcast has everything you need in a podcast.
Cliffo and Gabby summer series. This is us reliving the best of 2021.
Reminiscing is what you do during the summer holidays. So that's what we're doing and we're bringing you our favourite bits.
So this is one of my faves, June Gable, who played Estelle! Joey! It's Estelle! From Friends, and we caught up with her about the same time that the Friends reunion was really hot.
Isn't she fun? She's
so much fun. Jinx. Number two is this Brooke's bit?
This is Brooke's bit.
Yeah, okay. This is my one. So this is actually one of my favourite breaks that Gabby's done. It's a blonde moment she have, and let's just say I almost wet myself and I did spit out my drink while listening
okay.
to this.
Okay.
It was a real dumb moment of mine and Brooke's favourite. That
could
says
be
a lot.
So many moments.
I know.
To narrow it down to one, what
my
a task.
My favourite, because I want to sound like I am educated after that, is the NASA Never Gonna Get One.
Oh,
we actually spoke to an actual astronaut from NASA.
He was
who
incredible.
Who was so amazing. Talked about going to the toilet up there too.
Yeah, that's harder than you think, guys. Enjoy.
Joey, it's Estelle. Great news. I was able to get you and one guest tickets to your premiere.
One guest? You told me I could have six tickets.
Well, I sold four of them on eBay.
Oh, my God. So that's it? I only get to bring one guest?
What time you want to pick me up?
June Gable, a.k.a. Estelle, welcome.
Well, thank you so much. I think this is a very exciting event that is going to happen.
I think the whole world is excited about the reunion. We cannot wait to watch it in Australia tonight. But we have so many questions for you, June, playing the role of Estelle. Estelle's bio describes her as a chain-smoking, weathered woman in her 70s. She wasn't great at her job, but she was Joey's agent who got him the job on Days of Our Lives. But I was shocked to learn Estelle was just one character you played on the show. You played multiple characters, most notably Estelle. But how did you get so ingrained in the show that opportunities kept coming up to play different characters?
Well, I've played a lot of different characters for those producers. This was the fifth show that I had done for the producers where I played a variety of different character roles that I created. And so they knew that I could go as far out as they wanted. And when I first came in for the role, I was pretty much as I am. And then they said that was boring and that I should go away and come back and do something crazy. And so Estelle was the result.
I'm interested in the bio saying you're a chain-smoking, weathered woman playing a woman in her 70s when you were obviously a lot younger than that. How did you feel? Were you recognized on the street? Like, how did that go down?
Rarely do I get recognized on the street.
Yeah.
Sometimes people think I look familiar and they will approach me, but they're never sure. And of course, the first role I played, which is rather unusual in television land, was the role of a little nurse. And that was, I guess, what, in the first couple of episodes. And then they brought me back as the agent. But the first role I played was that role of the nurse, I guess, when David's wife gave birth, I think it was. I can't even remember, but I know that I played a nurse.
Interesting. I'm so keen to go back and watch that now. And look, watching Friends, you know, it's so universally loved. And when you do watch it, it is pure joy. It's funny. It's happy. It's goofy. It's always just an enjoyable thing to consume. Was it like that making it, or was it just work on the set of Friends?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should ask that question because many times in interviews I'm asked for salacious information, like what was it like on the set? Were people like hating each other? Were there bad things going on? I have to really be honest with you. It was a great group, and from the first year until the 10th year, there was never anything that I saw on the set untoward. You know, it was everybody got along. I never saw any of the problems that sometimes was reported in the press. Mm. And everybody was just like what you see on television. And that's sincere. You know, if there was anything that was really like awful, I would tell you. But it was just, it was just always homogeneous. It was always wonderful to be on the set.
Well, it's recently come out, June, that the main cast, like the main six guys, had a pact to never have any kind of romantic relationship with each other because they didn't want to ruin what they had as friends. Were you aware of that, or did you see any sparks that they had to put out?
Yeah. I saw some sparks at the beginning between people. It was really as everybody was getting to know each other. But eventually, there was nothing like that, and that is actually true. They stuck together as a pack. You know, they when one negotiated for money, they all negotiated for the same salary. And I thought that was kind of rather remarkable in today's day and age. But mostly they had a lot of different boyfriends and girlfriends that I met on the set. For example, Matthew was dating Julia Roberts. And wow. I remember when I would bump into Brad Pitt at the breakfast table, you know, I would bump into him and he was dating Jennifer. And so in other words, they branched out really, and they were not only trying to find themselves and their place in this business and the Hollywood stardom, you know, all of that happened to them so fast, but they were also getting their feet wet romantically with other people, not so much with each other.
I can't imagine that. You're just at the, you know, the trailer waiting for a bagel or something. There's Brad Pitt buttering some toast.
Can you tell us who the sparks were between at the start?
It was not something that I was privy to because I pretty much kept my distance in terms, we were all friendly. I would hang out in the dressing room sometimes with Matt or with everybody, but I didn't get into their personal lives. I chose to remain, to keep my own personal life separate from the work.
We are talking with the amazing June Gable, a.k.a. Joey, it's Estelle! Estelle Leonard, Joey's...
Oh, you do that great.
Joey's agent from Friends.
June, can you still do that voice?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a whiskey. It's a, you know, she takes a little shot of whiskey before she goes to bed and smokes 100 cigarettes a day. So it's that, Joey, it's Estelle. What are you doing? Don't sleep with the casting director. You know, it's that old Brooklyn... You know, babe, who just needed a little whiskey now and then and to get some sleep.
Thank you. Tell us more about the main six cast. I mean, the image of them in Central Perk sitting on the couch, it's just so iconic. It's going to, you know, go down in pop culture history. But off camera, what were the main cast like? Were they nice, approachable, you know, good people? Or did they kind of stick to themselves?
Well, you have to realize that when the show first started, they were all very young, and they really didn't have all that much of a resume. Some did more than others, but they were really starting out, and so they were green. And I remember Matt turning to me and saying, do you think it's going to sell? I mean, do you think that the show is going to go on past like 6 months? And you know, it's sort of like they didn't really know, and they were very young, and so much happened to them so quickly. Fame is a wonderful reward, but it's also can be a punishment because so much happens to you and you have to really walk that tightrope. And I think for all six of them over the years, I saw those that did well, those that struggled a bit with it, and those, but most of them, you know, came through really well. I think it's very difficult to go through what they went through and have all that thrown at them and then have to sort of maintain their lives and their careers. So it was interesting to watch it.
You were closest to Matt LeBlanc on the show because you, that's the guy you worked with majority of the time. Do you guys still keep in contact?
We don't keep in contact because so much has happened to all of us. I mean, I came back to the East Coast. I've got a farm here on the East Coast, and I live also in New York City. And I did a movie with Adam Sandler for Netflix. So much has changed, and a lot has changed for their lives too. So it's not easy to keep in contact. But I adored Matt and still do, and just to always watch to see what he's doing and wish him well. I really loved him very much, and he's very special.
Is it true? We read that you were a little salty about Estelle being killed off. Was that a bitter pill to swallow when you learned this character that is so iconic? And it was such an amazing episode when Estelle died as well, too, with Phoebe then impersonating her. But what was that like for you to learn that Estelle would be no more?
Well, at first it was disappointing. I understood what the writers were telling me. They wanted to bring him to Los Angeles. They wanted to change the story of his life. I get that. You know, that happens in television a great deal. And I, at first it was disappointing, but when I saw the actual remake of Joey, when I saw the spinoff, I wasn't unhappy that I wasn't a part of it. You know, it didn't quite work. I think, frankly, they should have surrounded him with some of the old people. Mm. But, you know, it was a choice. It was a choice that the producers made. And I respect them as writers and as producers so much that I just had to go along with it and understand that this is what happens in our business.
How do they break the news to you? How do they tell you that your character's going to die?
Well, that was hilarious because David Crane, one of the writers and producers, called me on the phone and said, June, are you sitting? And I said, do you want me to sit? I'll sit. And so I sat down. He says, now, I just want to tell you, this is nothing against you. We love you. You know we love you. But Estelle died. And for about 5 minutes, I'm trying to think, who the hell is Estelle? Who died?
Oh,
you know,
no.
What? You know, and then suddenly I'm realizing that he's talking about my character, you know.
So that's a bit of a relief when you realize it's not a real person.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm glad I was sitting when I finally realized it, you know. But I do understand, you know, this happens so often in the business, and you have to let go of those things. It was a great run, and she was an iconic character, and I think it all worked as it should have.
Yeah. I think everyone has a favourite Friends episode or a favourite Friends moment, if it's, you know, Joey whipping up a pair of paste pants or, you know, Chandler getting frustrated at
Ross
Pivot.
With his really bad tan.
Ross with the bad tan and the bright teeth. Like, there's so many moments. Is there one moment from, the storyline of the show that will just stick with you forever?
Yes. I was there on the set. I believe that I was working that day, but it was that audition that Joey had where he had to prove that he was Jewish and he had to prove that he was circumcised. And I got to tell you, everybody was, we were all gathering around. Nobody knew if this thing was going to work. And I got to tell you, on the first try, the thing worked. And everybody was just screaming. It was, you know, it was a great triumph for the television industry.
Wow. Well,
on that note,
I think that's a great note to leave on. June Gable, a.k.a. Estelle Leonard, Joey's agent from France. Just so great to talk to you on a really great day, too. It happens tonight, about 5 o'clock in Australia. We'll be able to watch the Friends reunion special. But to get your insights on what it was like on the set, like from two fans, it's just been so amazing this morning. So thank you so much for your time, June.
Yes, and thank you. I think it's going to be very interesting for all of you to see how they've matured and to see where they've come from where they were. I honestly think it's going to be wonderful.
Can you give us one more? Joey, it's Estelle.
Joey, it's Estelle. I'm not dead.
I'm not dead. Thank you, June.
You're fabulous. You know how sometimes when you step on your scales, you want to smash them?
Every time I jump on my scales as an adult.
I wanted to smash mine for a totally different reason because I felt like it kept giving me the wrong answer because it was giving me different answers. Not just the wrong answer because I didn't want to believe what it said, but the wrong answer because it kept changing the number. And I got really frustrated. So this happened the other morning and I've been doing this gut cleanse that has resulted in a bit of weight loss. So I wanted
you
to get on and check it.
The most wickety whack food.
I'm like a rabbit. A lot of spinach, a lot of lettuce, a lot of greens, but a lot of meat as well.
Eggy, muffin-y kind of smelly thing this morning.
Having egg muffins for brekkie. It's got halloumi in it. It's delish. But yeah, I've been very good with what I've been eating.
Well
no
done.
Sugar at all, which was quite the feat to get over. But I wanted to weigh myself because I'm getting toward the end of this gut cleanse. I wanted to see how I was going. And so I got on the scales and I was stoked with the result to the point where I wanted to take a photo of what I weighed so that I could send it to my trainer.
I can never do that because I can't reach past the gut
to
get
a photo
of the number. Like I've been so fat in the past that I have to lean forward
to take it
past the gut because the gut's covering the number.
Oh, you got to get one of those scales that keeps the number on there when you get off.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. That's my problem. It's the scales fault. You're totally right.
So anyway, I jumped on the scales, was excited. So I was like, cool, I'll grab my phone because I want to get a photo of this because it's like, you know, I hit my milestone and I want to send it to my training partner because 100%. She'd be so proud of me. So I jump, grab my phone and I jump on again to take a photo. And suddenly I wasn't below the milestone anymore. The number had changed.
Was the
and
phone
was,
the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, I was furious, right? So I went and got the other scales that are in storage to see if they would do what I wanted them to do. And they were also above the milestone. And I was devastated. And yes, Cliffo, you're right. The phone does weigh around about 100 grams. And it is what tipped the scale that little bit. That didn't occur to me. I was ready to throw the scales out because it kept changing the number. And when I told fiance Nev, I was like, oh my God, you can't believe the stupid thing I did this morning. I was furious. And he's like, ever since you went back to full blonde, these moments are getting more and more frequent.
Yeah, it's not the scale's fault, mate. It's definitely the hair. We're never gonna get one on.
Never gonna get one on.
Literally one I did not think we were going to get because we wanted to reach for the stars literally and talk to an astronaut and we have found one. Victor Glover, who is an astronaut at NASA, joins us. How are you, Victor?
I am great. Thanks, Gabby. It is great to talk to you.
Victor, how many times have you been to outer space?
I've been to space one long time. I got to go live on the space station for 167 days.
Wow. So talk us through, first of all, the training that goes into it before you're even allowed to go to space.
Yeah, and it's good that you put it that way. You know, there are levels to the training. So we show up as, you know, coming from whatever our backgrounds are, medicine, science, the military, education, all the different walks of life that we get people from, and you go through the basic astronaut candidate training. And essentially, the goal of astronaut candidate training is so that you can be assignable to a mission. That training takes 2 years, maybe even a little over 2 years.
Wow.
And you learn to spacewalk, do robotics, learn all of the complex systems of the International Space Station. You learn to gabarit paruski. We all speak a little Russian. And we have to learn how to operate the robotic. Yeah, pretty neat. One of my favorite parts of the training, actually.
Wow.
Toughest
all right.
part academically. For sure. And then when that's all done, you're assignable. That's when you become an astronaut, you get your astronaut pin. And then once you're assigned a mission, then you start the specific training for that mission, which can be anywhere from 1 to 3 years.
Wow.
That's
incredible.
A lot of training.
It's a lot, isn't
Lots
it?
Lots of training.
This is such a broad and open-ended question, but you lived in space for more than 3 months. What's it like living in space?
Wow. You know, that is such an open-ended question because I could answer it in terms of, like, just the daily logistics or in terms of, like, the psychological impact, you know, but all of it, I think, is just, it's undergirded by the awesomeness. Like, truly, that word is overused, but awe. Like, you're constantly aware. You're in an environment. I was in an environment that I was not used to being in. For 44 years, I've been used to gravity pulling toward my feet. If I'm standing up, you know, toward the center of the earth, if I let something go, it falls. And all that has literally been turned on its head. I slept in the overhead, which you would call the ceiling. And so every day when I woke up and I first saw the space station, it was upside down. At night when I went to bed, my last view, it was upside down. And when I moved around big boxes of stuff, it was really light because we were in weightlessness. And so that just, you know, that permeates through everything.
What everyday thing was the hardest to do in space? Because I've seen videos of astronauts trying to wash their hair or trying to even pour water or something of those similar things that you do so easily on Earth. What was the hardest everyday activity that you had to endure?
The hardest thing to do, I would say, is using the bathroom. Oh. That is really, oh yeah, imagine sort of your toilet, the water, plus a vacuum.
That's a lot to take in.
I won't get any more gross than that, but it's challenging. It's that it requires so much concentration where, again, for 44 or maybe, you know, 43 years prior to that, you know, going to the bathroom can generally be a time where you kind of zone out. You know, you might read your paper or whatever people do, you know, and you can zone out. In space, it is one of the things you have to concentrate on the most, because if it goes bad, it goes really badly.
Wow. This is probably a bit vulgar, Victor, but where does it go? Does it get just sucked out into space and then just kind of
drifts off,
floating around in the atmosphere for all eternity?
No, that's a great question. And it, this answer may not make you all happy, and all your listeners that want to be astronauts may rethink their life priorities and goals at this point. So the solid waste goes into a bag, and we stuff it in a big canister until we're done, and then we cap it. It's airtight, and we throw those away. They go into a cargo vehicle. Eventually, they go in as with the rest of the trash, and it burns up in the atmosphere when we finally refill it and release it. Oh. The liquid waste, however, the liquid waste is mixed with a chemical solution that is mainly acid, and then it has a liquid gas separator, and it goes through all these other special machines that are essentially are like magic, and then clean drinking water comes out of it.
No!
We reclaim upwards of 80% of our liquid. Now, that's from everything, from the urine, from sweat, from our, as we speak, the moisture that comes out of our mouths as we talk. Any other liquids on the station, our air conditioning system pulls them in, and we reclaim all that moisture. We're at about 80%. We need to do better than that, though, to go to Mars, obviously. But going to Mars, we're going to have to perfect that technique. So, I heard someone say, it was my colleague, Mike Fossum, a great but wise and funny gentleman, and he said, we turn yesterday's coffee into tomorrow's coffee.
So great.
Okay, so and to finish that answer, so here's the other half of that. The other side of that coin is, what's the hardest thing that you don't do? Mike Hopkins, my Dragon commander and colleague up there for that 5.5 months, said one of the things you miss is that on Earth you have random occurrences. You're walking down the hallway and you bump into someone, or if I get done with something early, like today, before I came here, I was flying and. But between now and my flight, I got to call my wife and just say, hey, I'm back and just checking on you. In space, you don't really get those random things. You know, you might get some free time back and be able to do something like call home. But in space, everything is very scripted. So one of the hardest things not to do is to have sort of those casual random events with people. You know, bumping into a colleague at work. You don't get that up there. There are no surprises. Mm. And actually, it's amazing how big of a part of your day that is.
Yeah.
Incredible. Victor, it's just been so great to meet you this morning. Victor Glover, a real-life NASA astronaut, spent how many days, did you say, at the International Space Station?
167 at the space station, and then several hours in our spacecraft, the Crew Dragon Resilience. So almost 168 days in space.
But who's counting, huh?
Richard, we got an astronaut on this morning. It's been so great to chat to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Clippo, Gabby, thank you. It's been great talking to you both.
You just finished listening to the Clippo and Gabby podcast, wrapped up thanks to Spotlight. Spotlight has everything you need to create, decorate, and celebrate this Christmas.